I know several women in our church want to apply for the be the pastor of the church. So anyway, you know where you're going to happen to you. No, I'm just kidding, of course. Yeah. Okay, good to have you tonight. Good to have those listening in online. Thank the Lord for you. Again, I'm reminded you that cookout, we hope you can plan on coming to it. And we have going to have a good time. Be sure to bring salads, desserts, you know, chocolate, anything related to that. And God will honor you and bless you and give you a special reward in heaven for the chocolate, okay? Anyway, my wife said, honey, get off this chocolate kick. And, well, I'm praying all the time that there'll be chocolate in heaven. It won't gain weight. Isn't that great? Huh? Have chocolate in heaven, won't gain weight. That'd be a blessing, wouldn't it, huh? Let's take our Bibles tonight to the book of 2 Samuel. And I want to go to the 11th chapter. I want to go look at this, and I come to you tonight with fear and trembling, dealing here with David's great sin. I believe David committed two great sins. One is here, the other is when he numbered Israel, which cost thousands of lives. Folks, we have no idea how much our life affects other people. And I want to think about David there in the 11th chapter and the 12th chapter tonight. As we look at this chapter, we will see David's sin. And even before you get there, turn with me to a New Testament passage. I could quote it to you, but I think it's best to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And look with me at verse 13, if you wouldn't. Just take a look at that. Highlight that verse in your Bible. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he stand to take heed, lest he fall. Between the words, he standeth, and lest he fall, are the words, take heed. Take heed. How easy it is to put yourself in a place where you will fall into sin. In this case, it's David with his sin to Bathsheba there. David, as you come to this chapter, is at the height of his career. Things are going so well for him. And then everything in his life seems to fall apart. First, I want to look at the contributors to David's sin. The contributors to David's sin. I believe there are four of them here in this passage. Then I want you to notice the cover-up that David attempted to do. And it seems like when you begin into a sin like this and you begin to fall, it's hard to put the brakes on. And so he tries to cover it up, and his covering up, he commits more sin, commits murder, does some things he shouldn't have done. And then for a whole year, between chapter 11 and chapter 12, which lasted a whole year, in the 12th chapter you have the confrontation of David's sin. And during that year, David wrote three psalms, Psalm 32, Psalm 38, and Psalm 51, which he confesses his sin. He lived a miserable life for one solid year because of his cover-up. And then I want you to notice, finally, the consequences of David's sin. There's a price to pay, and it's always different. Very interesting. David, because the greater the responsibility, the greater the consequences. That's what you find here with David. But look with me, first of all, the contributors to David's sin. I want you to notice indifference to his responsibility. There's the first one. And it came to pass after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, underline that phrase, because we find he had a responsibility, a time when kings go to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Reba. But David tarried still at home. There was an indifference to his responsibility. He decided to stay at home and went to bed instead of the battle. It was a price that he had to pay for that. And the door that opens us to the assaults of the flesh is the door of irresponsibility. It will open that door immediately to the flesh. And you will find, as you think about your own sins, and I think of my sins in my life, the one thing that the flesh would like for us to do is to forget about God. And when David, it's obvious he forgot about God. He just left God out of the picture. We know that because of that, he was not conscious of his sin. He certainly was indifferent to his responsibility. He was the king. But it was not only indifference to his responsibility, but it was the idleness of his mind. That's the second step. An idle mind, someone said, is the workshop of the devil, where he turns saints into sinners rather rapidly. And David, who is a man after God's own heart, decided to be a man after his own heart instead of after God's heart. And so we see not only the indifference to his responsibility, a time when kings go to battle, he sent Joab and his army, but he stayed at home. Idleness of mind, he's idle there. And you see that more in verse 2. And it came to pass an evening time that David arose from off his bed. He should have been at battle, but he was at bed. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. When you have indifference to responsibilities and idleness of mind, the devil will set you up rather rapidly. And he commits an independent act here, we're going to look at in a moment. And after he's independent of God. Notice verse 2, and it came to pass in an evening time that David arose from off his bed, and he walked upon the roof of his king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman wash herself, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon. I want you to get the word very there. He didn't just say she was beautiful. I'll tell you, she was a knockout. She was absolutely a gorgeous woman that would apply to the flesh that was out of control. Very beautiful, says the text, to look upon. And so because of the indifference to responsibilities and the idleness of the mind, he commits an independent act of God. He's no longer a man after God's own heart. He's following his own heart and not God's heart. And so that gives us the fourth contributor. Not only was there indifference, but he should have been to battle. He was home. Idleness of time. He is idle. He's trying to figure out what to do with his time. Be careful with idle time, folks. Try to say, keep things in order in your life. And then an independent act. But think, fourthly, the impure thoughts that took over. There are some verbs here that I draw your attention to. Look at verse 2 again. Would you underline these words when I give them to you? Came to pass in the evening time that David rose from off his bed and he walked upon the roof of the king's house. Understand that the houses of those days were all flat. You could, matter of fact, they would go up there to kind of relax, and he was relaxing that day. And I want you to notice from the roof, here's the words. He saw, gets the first one, underline it. He saw, the word saw here is a strong word. It is the idea he just stared and stared and stared. He should have turned away. It was a look that lingered. A look that lingered. That's the first word. He saw a woman washing herself, and the woman was very to look upon. And then look at verse 3. Because he not only saw, he sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, "This is not this Bathsheba?" I don't think there's any humor here, but he's up there taking a bath. That's a good name for Bathsheba, I guess. And the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. He not only saw a look that lingered, but he sent. It was a lust that lost control of the flesh. It was a lust that just took over. And at that point, I can assure you, God is nowhere in his thoughts. God is nowhere in his thoughts. He saw a look that lingered. He sent a lust that lost control of the flesh. And it was he took, get those words. It's a liberty that was a lie. He took, this is another man's wife. It's a liberty that he had no right to take upon himself. But it was a liberty that was a lie because he figured no one will ever know. Isn't that the way temptation works? No one will ever know. But God arranged. Keep in mind, God knew. God knew. And he not only saw a look that lingered, he sent a lust that lost control of the flesh. He took a liberty that became a lie, but it was also, he lay with her. Look there again in the text, in verse 4, he lay with her. It was a lawless act that led to his downfall. Let me say this to us all, David is never the same. He's never the same. He's completely different. Hard to get back up when you've been down there, when you get 59 years old. But he's never the same. It will change his whole life. He will lose all of his kids, basically, as a result of it. And so we see here a moment of pleasure developed into a lifetime of pain. Think with me. We find here, as we look at this text, and verse 4, David sent messengers and took her. She came into him. He lay with her, for she was purified from uncleanness, and she returned to her house. And then verse 5, and the woman conceived. She's now with child. David, you're in trouble. You're the king. And David, you're going to have to answer to this. And here's what David does. Again, he's forgetting about God, but for one solid year, God will haunt him and hound him. It's called conviction at which he faces this. Notice that, first of all, there are some thoughts here at the cover. First, there's the calling home of Uriah. That's the husband. And David there in verse 6, when he found out she was with child, David sent to Joab and saying, "Send Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent Uriah to David. And David deceives him. It's an act of deception. And he's trying to get him to come home to be with his wife so the child would appear to be Uriah's child and not David's child. It certainly was a moment of deception. And notice not only David's deception, but I thought of Uriah's devotion. David tried to get him drunk. An act which is an ungodly act to get him drunk, and Uriah would not fall for it. But I notice not only do I see David's deception here in the cover-up, but I see Uriah's devotion. Look with me, if you will, at verse 14. After he tries to persuade Uriah to go home to be with Bathsheba, he wouldn't do it because he said, "All my troops are out there in battle, and I'm home, and I cannot go home to be with my wife. I can't do that." It came to pass, verse 14, in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. And he went in, he wrote in the letter saying, "Set ye Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle, and retire ye from him, that he may be smitten and die." I stop right here for a minute. Can you imagine Uriah carrying this letter back to Joab? He doesn't read the letter. It's a letter about him's death, about him being murdered. But he's so loyal. Get that, folks. He's so loyal to David that he doesn't even take time to read the letter. He said, "This is not for me." So he doesn't read the rest. Little did he know, it wasn't for him, but it was about him. Then I see, thirdly, I see Bathsheba's despair because Uriah is killed in battle. Like Joab arranges this. Boy, a friend you don't need. You need a Uriah in your life. You don't need a Joab. Because you'll find later, Joab will turn on David as well. These kind of friends you don't need in your life. Now notice not only David's deception as he tried to deceive Uriah. Uriah's devotion, gets the letter, puts it in his pocket, takes off back to the battle, hands the letter to Joab, which is a warrant for his death. And then I see Bathsheba's despair. Look at verse 26. So Uriah is killed in battle. And when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she mourned for her husband. What despair she went into. A moment of pleasure for her, a lifetime of pain. She now has lost her husband. And please, finally, notice only David's deception, Uriah's devotion, Bathsheba's despair. But would you know God's displeasure? Look at verse 27 of chapter 11. And when the morning was past, David sent and fetched her to his house, and she became his wife and bare him a son. But the thing that David had done, what? Displease God. It's a strong word, folks. It literally means God was very upset. God was angry. And then I draw our attention to chapter 12 as we look there at what happens next. We see the confrontation of David. It's a whole year. I don't know if it, during that time he wrote these three psalms that I mentioned a little while ago or wrote them. I don't know. If you read those three psalms, you know that he certainly was under great conviction. Miserable life. It even affected him physically. Isn't that interesting? We call that psychosomatic illnesses. Psycho, the body. It's a soul in the body. Somatic, the body. And David literally became physically sick. Sin will do that often, won't it not? And he's sick. And we see here a year pass. And I want you to notice the timing. God sent Nathan to David. The Lord sent David and Nathan unto David, verse 1 of chapter 12. And he came unto him and said to him, there were two men. And now he tells a story. I can almost sense David sitting there. All you preachers, you're all like, you like to tell stories. I like to tell stories too, particularly about my family. My wife, I remember when our Susan was home, she said, "Dad, that's not the way it happened." And I remind her that's the way I saw it. And that's the way it's being told. Because in my mind, that's the way it happened. And we find he tells this story. And in this story, you see here not only the timing, but you see the teaching here. Look down here. Look at these verses. Look at the thought for a moment. There were two men in one city, the one rich. That's David in the parable. That's David. He's wealthy. He's got anything he wanted. All he had to do was snap his fingers. He could have it. The other poor, that's Uriah in the story, a parable that he tells. is Uriah. The rich man had exceedingly many flocks and herds. You know, David already had many wives. Isn't it interesting how the flesh operates? It's never satisfied. Never satisfied. I thought to myself, when I thought of the wives he had, they're no doubt beautiful women. But now David finds a very beautiful woman. He thinks, I got to have her now. But the poor man, verse 3, had nothing save that little ulam, and that's Bathsheba. That's just his wife. And David, you got many wives. And by the way, that was not God's will for David either. You read the book of Genesis, God has one man, one wife. Not one man and one man, not one woman, one woman. One man, one wife for each of us. And then we come down here to verse 4, and there came a traveler. Now, the word traveler here, that's the lust. You know, lust travels everywhere, everywhere. Travels in your thoughts, travels in your home, travels in your job. It travels everywhere you go is lust. It's always available. If we're not careful, it will get a hold of us. And so he tells this story to David. And when you talk about sheep and a lamb, now keep in mind, long before David was a king, what was he? The shepherd. So he is really upset. And he, verse 4, there came a traveler unto the rich man. He spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was coming to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was come to him. And verse 5, and David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And he said to Nathan, "Is as the Lord liveth, the man that had done this thing, he'll surely die." And then you find these very tragic words in verse 6 and 7. "And shall restore the lamb fourfold." Now underline the fourfold because it's so key in the story. David, you have just now pronounced the punishment on yourself. For fourfold, you will pay four times what you've done wrong because the position and responsibility. And look at verse 7. And David said, Nathan said to David, these are words. If David at all had a heart problem, he would have had a heart attack there. Nathan, I think an old man, took that bony finger and pointed in the face of David and he said, "Thou art the man." Wow. Thou art the man. So we see here, that's the confrontation. God wastes a year. God still loves David with a deep love. He wants David back as the man that was after God's own heart instead of after his own. So we see the consequences now of David's sin. We look here already at the contributors. There were four of them. We looked at the cover-up as he tried to cover it up, and every time he tried to cover it up, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. Then we see the consequences. We find in verse 13, go down there quickly with me to verse 13. And David said unto Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said to David, "Thou also, the Lord also hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die." I'll stop right there. David does not make excuses. He doesn't say, "I'm the king. Kings do this regularly. Take somebody else's wife. If you look at that time, they did it. The pressure's on me. You don't know my job. I'm under a lot of pressure. I just needed to do that." It's not what he does. He's so unlike another man who was king before him. If you go with me to, I forgot to write it down, but let's try 1 Kings 15. Let's try there. Yeah, that's it. 1 Kings 15. How about Saul? Look at Saul when he had sinned here in the 15th chapter, when God had told him what to do to kill all the Amalekites, and he doesn't do it. And Would you look there at verse 23? And Samuel says, "For rebellion is the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being." And look at Saul, verse 23. "And Saul said unto Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandments of the Lord and thy word." If he could have stopped there, what's he do? "Because I fear the people." He makes excuses. David doesn't do that. I believe God honored that. If you go down to verse 30 in the same chapter with Saul, verse 30, he said, "I've sinned, yet honor me now." How can you ask for honor if you truly were repentant of your sins? That's not David here, as you go to 2 Samuel, the 12th chapter. He said, "I've sinned." I don't make excuses. That's his confession. Then notice his consequences. And the consequences, my friend, found out were fourfold. Think with me as you go back to that 12th chapter with me. Again, David is broken man. Broken old. He's just broken. For 1 year, he's tried to live with himself. And he didn't know what to do. But notice here, the fourfold. Go back up to verse 6. "And he shall restore the lamb fourfold." The fourfold, I believe, is the punishment that he experienced. Think with me. There are four things that happened in David's life that was total tragic. And don't forget them. First of all, there was the death of the child. Look over there as David, verse 18 of chapter 12. "And it came to pass on the seventh day, the child died." The child had gotten sick. The child that was born, it was his own child to Bathsheba. And look at verse 14. Go back up. Verse 13. "And David said unto Nathan, I have sinned." I've read that already. "Nathan said to David, the Lord also had put away thy sin, thou shalt not die." But notice verse 14. "Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born of thee shall surely die." Now think with me of that thought there. That child will die. Go with me for a moment to the New Testament. Give you a couple references that you want to mark with that. That God said because of your responsibility you had. Look with me Romans first. Go over there to Romans 14. And look with me there at verse 14, chapter 14, verse 13 and verse 16. Look at these verses. Look at verse 13 there. "Let us not therefore judge one another anymore, but judge rather that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way." You ever stumble? We're careful. We're getting that age where we have both have stumbled and are on our property. Thus far, we haven't broken anything. But if you ever stumble at our age, you just have a hard time getting up. My son sent me a long stick to walk around on the property. And not too long ago, I stumbled and fell again. And it took me a while to get up. But I want to tell you something. When you stumble spiritually, it affects other people. But notice the next verse I draw your attention to, and that's verse 8. Let not then your good be evil spoken of. David, everybody knows about your sin. People looked up to you, they honored you, and now look what you have done there. So God is about to do some things in David's life that he'll never forget. Because of his great responsibility. And go back to verse 14 again of chapter 12. "Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given a great occasion to the enemy. Would you get that word? The enemies looked on. They said, well, that's some God you have. Why, how could God use you? The child also that is born of thee shall die. David mourns. He's fasting. He's weeping. He wants the child to live. The child dies. Somehow, I can see Nathan putting his hand around David's shoulder, saying, one down, three more to go. But look here at verse 22. It's a comforting verse. Would you underline that verse? It's a verse very comforting to me. I have two children in heaven. Look at verse 22. But now he is dead. Wherefore should I fast? He quit fasting after he knew the child was dead. He said, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. I like that. I'm going to see that boy one day. I'm going to go to him. He can't come back to me. Isn't that great? God's grace, God's goodness. But number one is down. Then I go to the next chapter, chapter 13. And this is about his children here. He has a son by the name of Amnon, one of his boys. And he is lusting after a half-sister. Look there at verse 1 and 2. And it came to pass after this that Absalom, son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Now, he really didn't. He lusted her. How do I know that? You'll find it in a minute. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick of his sister. I mean, he literally physically got sick over this lust. You can call it love you want to, but it wasn't love. And every young teenage girl need to understand, don't you give in to some young man because he says he loves you. It's not love, it's lust. And then we find over here, he rapes her. Wow. Look there in verse 14. Look at verse 13, the third chapter. Whether shall I cause my shame to go? The woman is talking to Amnon. Don't do this foolishly. Thou shalt be one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, speak to the king, for he will not hold me. If you want me to do it right. Howbeit he would not hearken unto her voice, but he being stronger than she, forced him, and he lay with her. In other words, he raped her. I know those are harsh words, strong words, but need to be said. Would you look at verse 15? Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred which he had, which he hated her, was stronger than the love wherewith he had loved her. An interesting verse. His act wasn't love, it was lust. And so the news got back to David somehow, and David, no doubt, is sitting on his throne, and when the shock came to him, I'm thinking almost in my mind, standing up saying, immorality? My son committed... And then he probably didn't finish the sentence. Because he's thinking, that's what I did. With Bathsheba. I committed immorality. He puts his head down and he weeps. Somehow, I believe, old man Nathan is handy. Puts his arm around David's shoulder and says, whispers in his ear, two down, two more to go. And then he has another son, Absalom. They're not brothers, half-brothers, not full brothers. And Absalom finds out about his sister. And he, in chapter 13, verse 28 and 29, look at it with me. He invites him to be with him. Now Absalom, verse 28, had commanded his servants, saying, mark ye now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, he invites him to a party. When I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not, have I not commanded you, be courageous and be valiant. the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man got up in his mule and fled. There, all the sons were there. Got a big party, big gathering. But he's only interested in one son to kill, the brother, half-brother. He hasn't killed, and word gets back to David, and I can see David sitting on his throne, and as they came in and said, Absalom has killed your brother, one of your sons. I can almost sense David rising in anger. Anger! Murder! Murder! My son killed... And he couldn't finish the sentence. In my mind, that's the way it appears. Because you see, he had done the same thing. He had murdered Uriah. He had committed immorality with Bathsheba. Those things took place. And I can see, in my mind's thinking, I can see that old prophet, very old, put his arm around David and he says, three down, one more to go. One more to go. And then I come over to the 18th chapter. If you want to follow with me to that 18th chapter. And here we know that Absalom turns on his dad. David's life is just full of one tragedy after another because of disobedience and sin. Now let me just stop here and say this, and I hope it doesn't come out wrong, but if it does, I'm leaving one day anyway. I believe America is like David. I believe our president resembles so much one tragedy after another is now stacked upon him because of his sin. I don't mean immorality. I don't mean murder, but yes, I do mean murder. He kills babies. It's okay to kill babies. Let me say to you, there's a price to pay. We must remember that. We know that David had to flee his kingdom, and his son took over Absalom. And you know the story in chapter 18 where he had, look at verse 2. And David sent forth a third part of the people under his hand of Joab, and a third part in the hand of Abishai, and a son of Zariah, that's Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand of Ittai, the Gittite. And what were they to do? They were to restore the kingdom, and they were... But notice what he says. He said, be careful. Look there in verse 5. And they commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for our sakes with the young man, even with Absalom. Whatever you do, don't kill him. Don't do that. I've already lost so much. I've already lost. I just can't afford to lose anymore. His problem is he trusted Joab. That's the same fellow that took that letter away from Uriah and arranged to have Uriah killed. And so you can trust Joab to do wrong. And so what's he do? A good friend of mine now, home of the Lord, is Lester Roloff, preached that message calls in the mule rode on. When Absalom got his hair caught up in the bush and the tree. Look at verse 9 of it. Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick bough of a great oak, and his head was caught hold of the yoke, and he was taken up between heaven and earth, and the mule that was under him went on. It just went away. And then you'll find in verse 14, then Joab said, I may not tarry thus with thee. He took three darts in his hand, thrust him through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And so he's killed. And the word gets back to David. He's on his throne. He stands up. Joab, of all people, I thought I could trust. No, you can't trust Joab, David. And then I look here at verse 33 of chapter 18. And the king was much moved, and up to the chambers over the gate, he wept as he went. Thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son, oh God, I had died for thee, oh absent, my son, I could almost see him now weeping. And I could see, oh man, Nathan, that prophet putting his arm around his shoulder, and he says, bore down, all been paid for. That's the price of sin. I hope we see that tonight. It doesn't mean that you'll pay the same way David, but it does mean we better take sin very carefully and concluded. Realize how terrible it can be for all of us. He lost a little baby. He lost Ammon. He lost Absalom. From that point on, Joab will turn on him time and time again. See, there's a price to pay when we step out of the will of God. My prayer tonight is that we realize, take this story as seriously as we can, and realize, Father, be careful with the look, with the lust, whatever it may be. It may not be immorality. It could be so many other things. It could be bitterness. It could be anger. It could be uncontrol, fill in the blank. Oh, God, spare us. God, you know, I thought about that story. I mean, David, that's what he did wrong is for all to see. Aren't you glad that most of our sins are not like that? God doesn't do that to us. But he put that there to remind us to take seriously our relationship with God. Father, tonight, as we close,